Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, DFL and divided. When the political junkie was on at the beginning of the week, Ken talked about the chaotic Democratic primary in California, and he used a rather colorful term. He said California Democrats were eating their young. Well, the same vivid terminology could apply to Minnesota DFLers this week. In an 11th-hour filing scramble yesterday, DFL incumbents also ran's former politicians declared their candidacies. You might need a scorecard to keep track. Here's a few of the highlights. After saying she would run for a fourth term as Attorney General, Lori Swanson instead decided to run for governor with a running mate who is a member of Congress, Rick Nolan, who said he was retiring, but apparently isn't. Keith Ellison, who gave every indication of remaining in Congress, instead decided to file for Attorney General. And former Attorney General Mike Hatch filed for his old seat, saying he wanted to see who ended up in the race. And I'm really just scratching the surface here, which leads to the question at the center of the show. What the hell, DFL? As our guests join us, I want to hear from DFL and independent voters. If you vote DFL or independent, how does all of this seat swapping and pre-primary maneuvering look to you? What's your message for Democrats who are lining up to challenge one another? I especially want to hear from young DFLers and young independents. If you're 35 and under, let's say, you're the next generation. You're going to shape where the party goes and where politics go in this state. I want to know how you see this, what this looks like with some of the old guard getting in to claim their former seats, and how this appears to you for the way the DFL party is changing for the future. So if you're 35 and under, love to hear from you this morning. For everyone, if you vote DFL or independent, how does all the seat swapping and maneuvering look to you? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. On Twitter, seeing a lot of good comments here. I'll get to as many Twitter comments as I can. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Catherine Tannucci is with us. She's a former campaign manager for Governor Mark Dayton, currently senior vice president of a public relations firm, and with me in the studio. And welcome. Really good to have you here.
Thank you, Carrie.
You were saying there's a bit of, oh, can I sit on the sidelines of this? But you also were saying it's going to be a slog till primary day, right?
You know, I'm feeling a little emotional that Governor Dayton will be leaving office. Of course, this was long expected. I didn't expect he'd run for a third term, but it's exciting to see all this action. I really couldn't have predicted it a year ago.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
James Farnsworth is with us. He's a political activist and a student at the University of Minnesota. James, good to have you in the studio. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Catherine, there are DFL voters watching Democrats line up to run against each other and I guess kind of divide the level of support that just one candidate might have wanted. Some of these Democrats are shaking their heads. How do you interpret what's going on? Is this really about there are some open seats that traditionally aren't open, or is this about it's a moment to push back against Trump? How do you see it?
There's certainly a lot of those factors are at play here. And, you know, I do think that this year will be a real test of the system that our political parties in Minnesota have been using for a long time. Traditionally in Minnesota, we've had a system of caucuses and conventions where the parties would select their candidates through that system. I think it's really been put under a lot of pressure this year. Most other states use a primary election to choose their candidates. Parties can compete, or, you know, Democrats can compete against each other in a primary to select the strongest candidate to put forward in a general election. We have a sort of combination of that in Minnesota, where the parties early in the year select their candidates at a state convention. And then you know, this year we're going to see many very competitive primaries. Now, remember, I worked for Governor Dayton in the past, who bypassed that party endorsement system. He never sought the party's endorsement when he first ran for governor in 2010. And we went straight to a competitive primary because Governor Dayton believed that was the best way for us to choose our candidates. And everyone agrees that that made, you know, that made Mark Dayton a stronger candidate against Tom Emmer. And it was... it was a test, you know, that didn't break the caucus system, though, right? And so I think this year, having so many seats contested in primaries, even after the party delegates just spent a whole weekend, money and time and a lot of time and effort to endorse candidates, only to see almost all of them challenged in a primary.
Right.
Except for Steve Simon somehow got out of this one unchallenged in a primary. So he'll be the only DFL endorsed candidate in our statewide offices to not face a challenger from his own party in a primary.
But I want to say, I think your point is really well taken, which is something that I wanted to ask James about. And I think we're going to hear from some of our younger voters as well, which is, does the infrastructure of the party that Catherine just described, and also describing candidates who haven't used it, does it matter anymore? I mean, what do younger voters think about it?
Well, I think that's a good point. I think thinking about political endorsement conventions and going to caucus and then going down to the convention is something that a lot of younger voters are navigating for the first time. So I think from my perspective, and I know many others as I talk to friends or as I talk to other people in the community, is that the convention system is viewed as inaccessible. You know, it takes a lot of resources to go to wherever the convention is, making all your arrangements and taking a lot of time off work. A lot of students and younger people work on the weekend. And, you know, it's seen that we like to... It's not a bad thing to have choices going into a primary. So while it's understandable why the system is set up the way it is, why the convention system and the endorsement, and you're not just coming together to endorse, obviously you're coming together to create platform items for your respective political party. So there's a lot of other business that's conducted, but it's just a hard system for young people.
It's a little unwieldy
to participate
for younger voters.
Absolutely.
Let me grab some calls here. We have pretty full phone lines here to Obi in Edina. Hey, Obi, hi. You're first up, and I'm really interested in what you have to say about this.
Yeah, I'm a 35-year-old pastor in the United Church of Christ. I serve a church in Edina, and I was at the DFL State Convention last weekend. So it's been very interesting to see. I was part of a coalition of people of faith called Faith in Minnesota. And we recognize that this is a moment for the DFL party to transition leadership to from an older, whiter, more moderate part style of the party to a younger, multi-faith, multiracial, truly statewide coalition that's reaching people of color and people of all economic backgrounds in greater Minnesota as well as in the metro.
So Obi, I just want to ask you this, though. Then do you see going around the endorsement and the convention process as the way to get to that kind of a DFL party that you just described?
No, I support the caucus and endorsement process because it's a way for people who have grassroots support to break through. Okay. If we go simply to primaries, you have to have a whole lot of money and name recognition already to make it into a primary.
Okay.
Make it through.
On Twitter here, Mary says, I was a DFL delegate this weekend. I'm a 33-year-old black female. I'm pissed at these last-minute filers. Why do we spend time and money to endorse candidates? We need party unity now more than ever. Trump and the GOP are a huge threat to the world. Walz, Ellison, Swanson should step aside. James, what do you think of that?
Well, again, I would go back to having choices. So I understand that people want to walk out of a political endorsement convention being unified because that obviously has financial benefits, has benefits of everyone coming together to support someone, and it makes it a lot easier. However, I don't think in this case that necessarily needs to happen. I think there's a lot of qualified candidates, specifically talking about the DFL side. They're people that have held office in the past. They have every right to compete like everyone else, talk to Minnesotans across the state, and go to a primary and go from there. So I think it's just people being uncomfortable with this kind of happening. But I also think in the age of Trump, and as people know, politics as usual has definitely gone out the door at this point.
So, Catherine, here's Andrew on Twitter, who says, as a 30-year-old DFLer, this last-minute shuffle has me worried. In a time where there is real opportunity for the party, it reeks of disorganization. What's it look like to you?
I hear that concern. And I would remind people, think we've done this before. This hasn't happened. A shuffle that we saw yesterday, like we saw yesterday, we haven't had that much excitement in politics in a number of years. That said, in 2010, we had a very competitive three-way primary for governor. And, I was tweeting with some colleagues yesterday. And the comment was, remember when we worked for three different candidates, three different DFLers running for governor, and we thought that was a crazy primary? This one maybe is raising the stakes a little bit. But the important point is that at the end of the day, all three of us who worked on different campaigns all summer worked on the same campaign and worked for the same governor afterwards, and we're friends to this day. And I do believe that DFLers are very, very capable of coming together after a competitive primary where we have... You know, the idea is that the best candidate will win that as chosen by the most number of voters. And I have no doubt that DFLers will turn around on in the middle of August and be united.
But you do know that the concern is you use resources to fend off primary challenges from the same party, right? It's not like gathering all your resources, having the entire summer to work on that. You have to pay attention to the other people that are challenging you in the primary.
There's no question. But what we found in 2010 also was that this elevated the conversation in the general public. And so it is not it's not a waste of resources in the sense that all Minnesotans will be watching this race, all of these primary races. And don't forget, Republicans will be doing the same thing. They have competitive primaries as well. And so it is not a bad thing, I don't think, to be talking about DFL values all summer long.
This is a conversation about what happened yesterday with this 11th hour scramble of filings for different seats, particularly among the DFL. And we've asked two guests to come in today and talk about what it means for the endorsement process, for voters in general, for the future of the DFL party. And I'm asking you this morning to talk to me, particularly if you're 35 and under, a DFL or independent voter. What does this look like to you? Maybe as Mary, you participated in the convention over the weekend and you're looking at all these last minute filings and thinking, what is going on? Does this give you hope for the vibrancy of the party? Are you concerned about something that might look like disorganization? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter, at Kerri, it's KERRI-MPR, to Nick in Cloquet. Hey, Nick, thanks so much for hanging on.
Hi, thanks for having me. So I'm a 22-year-old voter in Cloquet, generally vote Democratic. I think it's really exciting to see all these candidates, but my primary concern, like some of your guests have been raising, is that this is going to split up resources and potentially hamstring the Democratic Party before things even get started. I think one of the big concerns, especially, is given that the primaries have a somewhat different, involvement participation rate than the actual general election.
Right.
That could actually lead to this whole mix of candidates, and as you said, things being divided, not having as strong a challenger, and leading to worse prospects, especially since a lot of the polls, like to read Nate Silver's 538, are showing that, in fact, the GOP is, within a few points in a lot of areas in the U.S. to the Democratic Party.
All right. Good to have the call. So, James, what do you think of that? Catherine and I were talking about you inevitably use resources to fend off a primary challenger. Is that okay?
Well, I will say the favorite way that I saw it described online yesterday by a friend on Facebook was that the DFL is playing a high-stakes game of musical chairs. In people leaving different positions that are vulnerable, whether it's their state house seat or other positions. I think the concern about splitting up financial resources is important because, again, having the endorsement consolidates your resources together and kind of you're viewed as being stronger over the summer. However, I think Catherine made a really important point, which is this elevates the conversation and, you know, overall is going to make the party a lot stronger. It's going to give people an opportunity to clarify their values, you know, whether you're from greater Minnesota or from the metro area. I know there's a lot of those concerns as well. So I think from a system standpoint, yeah, there's systems that have been in place for a long time. Something happens where the system gets interrupted and then you have to rebuild from there. And that's what's happening right now with a big influx of younger voters and people participating in the process for the first time.
Catherine, you said something interesting a few minutes ago about Governor Dayton avoiding the endorsement process and going right to a primary. And you said it was generally understood that that made him a better candidate against Tom Emmert. Why?
I'd argue that it did make him a better candidate because we faced Mark Dayton as a candidate we attended something like a dozen candidate forums and debates before the primary. And so we had opportunities almost every week to have our candidate out there talking about his ideas and his priorities and having those challenged by other candidates, being able to defend and describe what he wanted to do very well. And it spread our message. There's opportunities to spread our message. And so by the time, you know, after that August 10 primary, he was able to turn around and we didn't have to do debate prep. He was prepped. We were ready to go. We'd been campaigning hard all summer. I'd be more concerned if we had, you know, consolidated resources and just had one candidate who felt like they could just sort of coast all summer without being challenged. I think having that primary campaign made our campaign a lot stronger for the general election in the fall.
If you're just getting in on the show, that's Catherine Tannucci. She's a former campaign manager for Governor Mark Dayton and currently senior vice president of MZA Company. It's a public relations firm. And James Farnsworth is with us. We talk to him about politics every now and then. He's a member of student government at the University of Minnesota, very involved in state politics. He's like the next generation. How old are you, James?
I'm 20.
20, the next See, I think that's helpful that you're this interested in politics because there's a lot of apathy and cynicism among younger voters, aren't there?
Yeah, and there's a lot of my peers that are joining the system for the first time. Hence, you know, having all these ideas and reactions to systems like political endorsement conventions that have been around for a long time but are completely fresh to people my age.
Kristen says on Twitter, 29 years old, seat swap all they want. As long as the DFL can coalesce around a solid message beyond anti-Trump, have a real message, and speak to people besides those on the fringes. How do you hear that, James?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's clear why people are a little uneasy. It's, you know, moving out of your position and, you know, being vulnerable and wanting to participate in that conversation with Minnesotans. It's a scary thing. But I think, again, over the summer, as the campaign itself naturally plays out, there'll be different conversations that are had. And I think going into November and going into the general election, the party will be a lot stronger in terms of what are values of greater Minnesotans, what are values of greater Minnesota constituents, and what are values of people that live in the Twin Cities. And I think as long as the party can make sure that they're unified at that point in message, you can be positioned to be strong going into the general.
Let me take a call here from someone who is outside of the Twin Cities to Alexander in Duluth. Hey, Alexander. Hi. Tell me what your story is.
Hi there. So I was a first-time delegate at CD8 this year, and I'm 21 years old.
Excellent.
And I think having both systems are really important because what we're seeing right now, this jockeying for positions, I feel like this is something that's always happened, but we're just seeing it play out in front of our faces. And so having the kind of caucus system and allowing kind of the grassroots to show and allow the party to kind of the grassroots to push the party in one direction is really important. But also bringing strong candidates to the general election, I think a primary does that a lot better. Because when you have a convention, your candidate's being decided by a couple hundred people, but a primary really allows many more people to become engaged. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, thanks, Alexander, for the call. It reminds me to ask you, Catherine, about, you know, the complaints, and I think Governor Dayton understood this, which is why he didn't go for the endorsement. People will, critics of the endorsement system and the conventions will just say it's a bunch of fringe activists making a decision that isn't necessarily geared towards what is the best for the party overall. And often you end up with a candidate who doesn't really represent DFL belief, I guess, across the spectrum. Why do we even have endorsements anymore? Maybe we ought to get rid of them.
You know, James actually made an important point earlier about there is other party business that happens at the state convention, for example, and it is worthwhile for the state party to discuss and debate and decide what our platform will be, what is most important to us. And I would note, I was at the convention for a little bit on Saturday. Very few mentions of Trump. I don't think I heard the president's name once. I heard a lot of really forward, progressive, positive messaging about what we want to do as DFLers. So I was encouraged by that, and I don't think we win if we run just against Trump. And so I was really excited to hear candidates talking about what they want, not just what they're against.
Just one more thing to come back to this endorsement thing, though. You could have a party convention to handle all this business. You could skip the endorsement. You know, why not?
Well, I do think that this year will be a real test of that. And I think the test will come, though, if the legislature is willing to pass a bill that would establish a June primary. That's what would really change the game. As we saw yesterday, many states across the country held their primaries.
Right.
And what we can't forget is that in 2020, Minnesota will be holding a presidential primary, I believe in March. And then we have our usual primary. It will be set for August. And we'll have caucuses and conventions in between there. So I think in the next 2 years, the legislature needs to get to work to sort that out, because it would be, if you thought yesterday was chaotic, I think having two primaries and caucuses
would be
really, really chaotic. So I do hope that the legislature will take a hard look at this. And I've been for a June primary. I think since 2010, I've said I'd support that. I think it's what we should do. It works well in a lot of other states, and I think it would serve us well.
Jason says on Twitter, maybe I'm missing something. Why do the endorsements happen before the end of the filing period? Anybody know? I think that's a pretty good question.
That's a great question.
Yeah, I never thought of that. And to the phones here to Rishab in North Oaks. Hi, thanks so much for waiting.
Yeah, thank you very much.
What are you thinking about this?
So I thought what you said earlier about the Democrats and the DFLers kind of like lacking organization is extremely important. And that really synthesizes all my thoughts, because I think one thing, I've been, you know, a Democrat my whole life, and I think one thing I've noticed is that Republicans are incredible marketers. They have a very simple ideology, and they can get that out to the voters. And I think that all this endorsement, all these political moves that the Democrats are doing, it's very calculating, and it's very difficult for the American people to really understand what their position is. You know, like Trump, for example, he provides a great opportunity for the Democrats to run a message which is very simple: I don't like Trump. And that's something all Americans who are Democrats, at least, can really grasp onto.
Wait, hey, by the way, Rishab, how old are you? You're 20?
I'm 20.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you involved in politics, or you're kind of watching this as a voter?
Well, so as of now, I'm not, but before I did work on a political campaign, Greg Clawson.
Okay. Yeah, really good to have your call. Glad you. What do you think about what he's saying, James?
Well, I will say, so speaking to disorganization, so I had a friend who was working on Tim Pawlenty's reelection campaign text me yesterday and said, we're dancing in the office when all this stuff was going down. I think that's an interesting point. I mean, I think, you know, obviously how you sell your message to voters, which I'm not nearly an expert on, but I know it's important and a key part of campaigns. I think that, yeah, there were a lot of tweets yesterday from Republican politicians in the state talking about the disorganization. There were a lot of clever hashtags that people made up. But I think it's just going to be messy when the tides are changing and when things are getting sorted out. I don't think systems change is an easy thing, or it's ever been a glamorous thing. So I think, again, this is just kind of a transition year. Obviously, it played out in a whole lot of different directions yesterday and in the past couple of weeks that people didn't expect. And it's just, we'll just see how it ends up. It's a transition.
I want to play this, because you said they were dancing in the offices of the reelection for, or of the second
what second, what do I call this for Governor Pawlenty? And I think it's not going to be necessarily easy for the Republicans on the gubernatorial primary either. And for this reason, let's hear from Jeff Johnson, who is the endorsed Republican candidate.
One of the reasons I'm a stronger candidate, other than the fact that I can unite the party rather than divide it, is that I'm going to be able to talk about the future during this campaign. And if Tim's our candidate, it's going to be all a referendum on him. Part of that is going to be his time in Washington, the fact that he made $10 million as a D.C. lobbyist for big banks and credit card companies.
I see you nodding over there.
I think,
Catherine.
I think Jeff Johnson's a little bit off message, because I think this will actually be a lot about the, you know, what Governor Pawlenty did in his 8 years as governor and left us with a $6 billion deficit and stole money from the schools and underfunded transportation. But I think that DFLers still have a chance to talk about all those things over the summer. Like, now they have a chance to. Now, this could go badly, right? I acknowledge,
as they're arguing among themselves,
that the concerns that your callers and that a lot of DFLers have about being disorganized are valid concerns, but they have not proven true yet. We can still have a positive primary, a positive campaign where we don't destroy other DFLers, but we continue to debate and discuss in a productive way what we want to do to make sure that Governor Pawlenty is not governor again.
But what you know is in a primary, you have to distinguish yourself in some ways among your other DFL candidates. And to do that, in some ways, you have to critique the other person's policies to give yourself an advantage, which then is fodder for Pawlenty or Johnson.
There is a way to do it. There is a way to do it that's not just destroying the other candidates, the other DFLers. And you can, I think Mark Dayton did it successfully. He made a case why he was most electable, why his plans and policies would serve Minnesota best. And we made that case to Minnesotans without destroying the other DFLers. And notably, we turned around and campaign managers for two of our biggest opponents both served as chief of staff to Governor Dayton. Like, there is, it is very, very possible. And I just want to remind people that though we had a very competitive three-way primary in 2010, a lot, we all came together after that and worked together and have had the successes that Governor Dayton has seen in the last 8 years.
Emily says on Twitter, why should 2,000 delegates at a convention decide for Minnesota? What's wrong with the primary system? It's the best way to get people to know a candidate and get people engaged in a really important year. Why do we need to unify now? Another Emily says, I'm concerned with our large turnover in the U.S. House, losing a lot of Dems with growing seniority that could have better committee roles if they take the House. James, that's a point, right? Along with experience comes seniority, comes clout in Congress. We're potentially going to lose that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, people, again, get uncomfortable when, for instance, Keith Ellison leaving his seat, leaving his position. Now he says he's going to stay involved in his leadership position at the DNC. But that aside, having his position in the House and possibly, you know, losing that to someone with less seniority is a real concern. But I think talking back to the first Emily's point about conventions, I think, you know, coming out of the DFL convention this weekend, it can be viewed by a lot of voters as, you know, people were alienating different candidates. You know, there's the criticism that Tim Walz is more centrist, that Aaron Murphy is an electable statewide.
Yes.
That Lori Swanson is kind of, you know, sticking it to the party and
That's
doing whatever she wants.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you don't want to come out of the party, or you don't want to come out at convention stained. The primary is, in the primary campaign, is the way to have that conversation. Let's not stick labels on people. Let's not, you know, do all that. That's where you have that conversation.
What, you live
voters
in a utopia here, James? Of course we're going to say things like Lori Swanson.
Yes. Yes.
How do you read Lori Swanson's decision yesterday, Catherine?
Well, this was not entirely unexpected in that several months ago, she openly was, you know, considering running for governor.
Yes.
She did say that she was not going to run for governor.
She did.
She filed for re-election as attorney general and went to the state convention. She has easily won her races in the past. She has served Minnesota for a number of years. She's not unknown to the delegates. And in a in a very strange turn, she got up on stage before the vote to endorse her, and she did not speak to the delegates and ask for their endorsement. Now, people spoke in support of her, and other, you know, supporters of hers said that she has done a great job and should be endorsed. But she did not address the delegates herself and ask for their endorsement. And on the first ballot, she did not get enough votes to secure the endorsement. It was she was ahead, but her challenger for the endorsement was very close behind. And she conceded the endorsement before the second ballot. Now, there were rumors flying that day at the convention hall that she was going to run for governor. And the friend that I was with said, stop joking about that. That's never going to happen. And about, 24 hours later, she announced that she'd be running for governor. So something that she had been thinking about. People suspect that maybe she changed her mind about running for reelection as attorney general, thought that she should maybe take a run for governor. And that's what happened. Now, that doesn't feel great, right? Like, I think the delegates were very, very displeased that they thought, I mean, I think she would have gotten endorsed for re-election as attorney general if it had gone to a second ballot. I expect that's what would have happened because she was our strongest candidate at, you know, at the time to run for re-election. But I know that a lot of DFLers are pretty offended by her decision to drop her reelection bid and jump in at the last minute to run for governor.
Let me grab a call here before we go to news with a young guy who was actually a delegate at the convention. Sammy, is that right?
Yeah, that was me.
Okay. You sound a little dispirited.
Well, this was my first time participating in a state convention.
Uh-huh.
I found it to be an onerous and inaccessible process right from the beginning.
That's too bad.
Of having to go to your precinct caucus on a Tuesday in February. I spent 12 hours at my Senate district convention on a Saturday in March.
Wow.
And then had to give a whole weekend in June to be down in Rochester. And I just had to consider myself to be a pretty privileged person to be able to take that amount of time to dedicate to a process where I think all Minnesotans should be able to have a voice. If you had work, if you had kids, take care of parents, if you're ill, any number of other barriers that would have prevented someone from participating in this process, I don't think that this is necessarily the most democratic way to choose the candidate. And here we are going to the primary anyway.
Right.
So what was all of this for?
Sammy, can I ask you, would you do it again? Or,
I mean, if it's the system we have, it seems like that's the only way to participate right now, you know, in terms of getting the party to get behind one candidate. But I would love to see some real conversations about looking at this from a holistic angle. And do we really need this endorsement process through a convention, through the caucuses?
Really?
Or can we just have that June primary that we've been talking about for so long?
I'm really glad to have the benefit of your experience over the weekend, Sam. You're 22, right? I hope you'll stay involved. But thanks
Absolutely.
So much. Yeah, thank you for the call. And then from my friend Deb up here in Alexandria, she says, it wasn't 2,000 delegates. It was about 1,300 voting. I'm in my 50s. It was my first convention. I would call it chaotic, strange, and wrong. Not sure I would go back. We're talking about what this portends, this 11th-hour scrambling yesterday and the primary challenges and what it means for the endorsement. And I want to grab a call here from Mercedes in St. Paul. Hey, Mercedes. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hello. Thank you for having me on. Yeah, I was actually a delegate to the state convention for the DFL this past weekend.
Okay.
And I am actually one of the Faith in Minnesota delegates.
Good. So that we heard about at the beginning of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. So we are a coalition of people from all faiths, mainly Christian and Muslim, and we actually had 10% of the delegates. So we have been building relationships with all of the candidates, and I personally spoke with all of the candidates and their running mates.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to make really informed decisions and really push the conversations with all of the candidates. And our politics is one of relationship and joy and faith and hope. And when the candidates gave their speeches, when they started putting out their literature later on, they were using our language So we saw that people working together in consensus for positive things.
So Mercedes, how do you feel about this then, that there are a number of candidates who aren't abiding by the endorsement that you participated in?
Right. So I feel that the candidates should abide by the endorsement. And when they say, we want to have a primary because we want to let the people decide, well, the people already did decide. There were precinct and local caucuses, and there you could go and elect a delegate to go to the state convention. And because we were able to really interact with the candidates, we were able to make informed decisions. Whereas in a primary, the candidate with the most money gets the most advertising and wins, regardless of their actual position.
Mercedes, you raise exactly the arguments in this debate about the endorsement in the primary, and I was watching Catherine's reaction to this. When Mercedes said, well, the people did decide, Catherine, you kind of recoiled.
That's true, and that's the best articulated argument for this that I've heard. But I have to push back a little bit that, I mean, there was about 140, I believe, Faith in Minnesota delegates, and they were very, I do believe that their coalition had a huge impact on the endorsement process. That's impressive, but I don't think that 140 delegates with a very admirable but admittedly specific focus and specific somewhat narrow concerns for this election should be the ones deciding. I think that the conversation just has to be bigger than this, and that the idea of a really, really small group of people making decisions on who is going to face the Republicans in the fall, it shouldn't be limited to that.
James, what would you say to Mercedes' argument? Well, we were vetting. We're highly informed. We actually have conversations with these candidates. We're better placed to know who's ready to go forward than, you know, the people that are voting in a primary.
Yeah, I like exactly what Catherine just said about it's very admirable to Faith in Minnesota delegates that they did their research, that they showed up, that they talked to everyone, because that's important to get everyone's perspectives, and that they showed up and did their work and participated in the process. However, yes, you can make an argument that the people did have a say. The people at the convention had a say, not the broad base of Minnesotans, not the many, many students and young people who weren't there because they had to work.
But the idea is, right, as Mercedes said, you work your way up through the system and you end up being the representative, right, for the people that can't.
But that implies that the students and the people who work were actually at their 12-hour Senate district convention.
Yep. Yes.
That's also impossible. I think it's very, very self-selected and a very narrow group of people.
You agree with that?
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
Okay. To Jenna in Bloomington. Hi, Jenna. You were also at the convention?
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. So, I am a middle-income white woman with lots of privilege that I recognize. And I still found it extremely hard to participate in this process. You know, like other people have mentioned, it was, multiple hours, multiple days, lots of resources and energy and time away from my, young children. I went through the convention process. It was quite an experience. This is the first time that I did it. I haven't been able to in past years because I do have young children. And so I guess I just wanted to say that although I went through that process and it's quite frustrating with where we're at now, I'm extremely supportive of the primary system and actually would love to see the DFL, instead of doing this whole convention process where we're endorsing candidates before the filing deadline has even been hit, I would love to see the DFL working across the state and building support and momentum for our party and our values rather than a specific candidate. And then once we have the primaries and, if we've done our job well, more people across the state are energized and excited to vote in the primaries and in the election, then we can endorse a candidate after the primaries and throw all of the DFL resources behind that candidate.
This is a really interesting perspective, Jenna. So to go through this at the convention, but then to say, okay, we endorsed, but now there's going to be a primary, you're saying it can all benefit the party.
Yeah, I do. I do believe that. And again, I would love to see our party, supporting the values of our party, supporting more people being able to get out and vote. I don't know if I really feel like it's that strategic at this point in the, and where we're at in our society and the system we have set up, I would love to see the system change, honestly. Okay. I would love to see the DFL take a more, a broader-based approach in terms of building more support for our party itself and the values that we represent. Mm-hmm. And then once we have a candidate that's voted on in the primaries, to really throw the support behind that candidate.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It does. Jenna, thanks so much for the call. I want to add here, Catherine, to you from Nikki, who says, I appreciate your guest's sentiments about the primary process. And she's kind of concurring with what Jenna just said. That the primary process can remain positive. It can be that way, and I truly hope it stays that way. However, Walz and Otto threw that out the window at the convention this weekend by firing shots at Murphy. It's already started, Nikki says.
Oh, that's interesting. Minnesota politics are so clean. I mean, I just love it when you look at other states, what would qualify as a shot against another candidate in another state. I think Minnesotans would just about fall over because I saw some of the shots at other candidates at the convention, and they were relatively tame, I think. And so I love Minnesota politics.
To the phones here to Matt in St. Paul. Hi, Matt.
Hi there, Carrie. Good morning.
Morning. You're in your early 20s, is that right?
Yeah, I'm 23 years old.
So how are you seeing this?
I think that the conversation that we're having is, quite honestly, a little bit of a red herring. We're kind of coming at this from the angle of either we have sort of a strong endorsement process where we go through the caucuses and the conventions, and then we pick a candidate and stand by it, and that's the end of the debate. Or we kind of go to a weak endorsement or no endorsement and then go through a primary system. I think that it's an important conversation to have, but it's maybe not the most important one.
Okay.
I think that the core of the issue is really getting more inclusive in the DFL. So even when you go, all the way you make that decision, how we do the endorsement process is done on the party level with party voices who've, you know, been elected, the people who go to those caucuses. And many of these voices, it's very white. It's very in cities. It's very in the cities, not very much outstate. It's not very representative of immigrant communities, not very representative of people of color. These voices aren't really at the table when this decision is getting made. So if you want a healthy DFL, if you want to pick the best candidates, be it a strong endorsement or a weak endorsement, you really have to make these decisions with everybody at the table.
Okay.
So it's kind of like we're having this debate, but all these voices aren't necessarily here for it, especially inside the party.
James, I think you came here primarily to say that today, right?
Yeah.
This opens up more the kind of voices that we traditionally would not think of as influencers, right, in the way the party process goes, the infrastructure of the party.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. I think that those traditionally underserved populations that have high percentages of people of color, immigrants, first-time voters, all of that, can't participate in the process or are unable to. So the people that need to be part of the conversation of, it's not only a values-based conversation, but it's a how do people participate conversation, they're not able to be at the place at the convention where you talk about that. So that's kind of the first systematic flaw to the caller's point. So I think that's really important. And I think something also kind of along the same lines is that out of the convention, I saw a lot of tweets about that, specifically at Tim Walz, saying that, oh, of course, this is a white man that's, not wanting to go through with the endorsement process and kind of go through on his own. And one, I don't think that's true based on his record. And two, I think a lot of people overlooked his running mate, who comes from an incredible background, Peggy Flanagan, and represents a lot of those communities. So that was kind of disappointing to see from people within the DFL talking about not only that ticket, but making some of those other similar observations. I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Tempers are running high, yeah. Right? And we're dealing with social media. Here's Sam, who says, old guard says caucus convention is the way to go. Get involved and make yourself heard. Then the endorsement doesn't go their way. And suddenly they say, not like that. The primary is the way to go. Also, don't forget the delegates represent dozens of people, not just a small group. To Liz in Cloquet. Hey, Liz, you were also a delegate over the weekend?
Yeah, it was our first time actually getting involved in that way and making it all the way to the state convention.
What was
my
it like?
My husband was an alternate and I was a delegate. You know, we're tribal members. We live on the reservation, one income household. So we made great sacrifices to get there, fully believing in the process, thinking this was the way. And after attending our congressional district, CD8 convention, it was that was disempowering. And this just proved to be even further disempowering.
Oh.
There's got to be a better way. I was surprised at the theatrics in between the ballots that really didn't say much of anything other than, you know, a little bit of theatrics. The party kind of disappointed me.
So, Liz, this is interesting. Your first time at the convention and you're watching how this unfolds. What? And you're saying, I don't think this is... It's about serious politics. It's about a lot of drama and theatrics.
That's what it felt like to me. I'm a very grassroots, down to earth, what you see is what you get kind of a person. And to see how loyalties seem to shift. And I had people, you know, coming at me from different directions because I was for environmental candidates and,
uh-huh.
And that they did not, you know, progress. And so then other people coming and trying to convince me to vote for what seemed to be the majority, which I would expect. But then the various shows on the floor, on the stage, that it was just very surprising.
As a political reporter, I love that stuff. But I do hear what Liz is saying. Do you, Catherine? I mean, you've been involved with conventions.
That's the fun part, right? Like, that's why we go for the show.
It's true. We're hearing from Brian Baxter, our political reporter at the Capitol, that Mike Hatch is going to withdraw his filing for attorney general for his old seat. Probably to be expected.
I saw that on Twitter. He had said when he filed for attorney general that he would withdraw his name, which there is a 2-day period where candidates who do file can withdraw their name and that won't be on the ballot. He said he would if one of his other preferred candidates decided to run, and more than one of them did. So he says that it's a full ballot and he'll withdraw his name.
I'm going to be doing a lot of shows, having a lot of conversations about issues. I'm curious whether you two think that there's an issue that will emerge as an overriding motivator for a lot of DFL voters. James, what comes to mind?
Well, I think, as we've discussed in the past, gun violence prevention is
okay.
really important. That's what's mobilizing a lot of young people to the polls right now, is what our candidates going to do to keep us safe in our schools and keep us safe in our communities. And I think, especially given what's going on with the March for Our Lives tour over the summer and continuing conversations around the country, gun violence prevention and how to be safe in our schools should be, and I think will be, a top topic of conversation.
I really hope you'll come back and talk to us about what you're hearing and not hearing from the candidates on gun prevention violence. Okay, so we'll do that later this summer and into the fall. Catherine, what do you think?
Well, I'm glad to hear that you've got plans, and I know we will be having a, you know, vibrant conversation over the summer, because I think that when we talk about process, we lose, right? Like, this has to be about the issues. And I expect that in Minnesota, like across the country, it will be, it's always about jobs and families, right? Like, as a, you know, middle income, middle class Minnesotan, I'm worried about daycare. I'm worried about schools. I'm worried about my next job and how to get ahead a little bit. And I know that there's a lot of Minnesotans in similar situations. And so I do hope that we'll continue to talk about those issues.
Come back.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. James, thank you. Catherine, thank you very much. Hey, if you got in on the middle of the show, you missed some fantastic analysis from our guests and great calls. Thanks to all of you, 35 and under voters, people that participated who called in to share your view. So if you missed that discussion, you can find it on the podcast. It'll go up in a few hours. Listen, let me know what you think on Twitter at @CarrieMPR.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.